This is Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network, and I am your host, Mark. And not too many of us know what we want to do when we're teenagers. Hell, I'm still not entirely sure, and I'm coming up on 50. But Jennifer Hartswick did. She almost didn't have a choice. Music and entertainment ran in the family. And while she's best known for playing trumpet with legendary musicians like Trey Anastasio and Phish, Carlos Santana, Tom Petty, and Herbie Hancock, to name just a few, that's not the instrument she started with. But once she found it, it was all over. In fact, she went to college for music and at one point was asked to teach a class she was in instead of attend it. Well, it was at that point she made an important decision in her life, which was followed by a huge coincidence 10 minutes later. Jen talks about the life of an independent touring musician very candidly. We also talk about music's effect on buying groceries, the amazing advice she received from Herbie Hancock, and the beauty and importance of falling on your ass. Check out her latest album, Something in the Water, on Brother Mr. Records. Check out jenniferhartswick.com for social media links, album purchase info, tour dates, and a lot more. Follow us at Performance ANX on social media. Check out performanceanx.threadless.com for stuff. And ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety if you just want to send us a nice cup of coffee. And now get ready to smile a lot with Jennifer Hartswick on Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Jen Hartswick. I'm on the Performance Anxiety. I'm going to start again. Hey, this then my voice cracked. I'm going through puberty. Hey, this is Jen Hartswick. I'm on the Performance Anxiety Podcast, and we're talking about my new record, Something in the Water. Hope you'll check it out.
Well, since I have no idea what the hell's going on. I've been doing a ton of research in addition to listening to your albums. So what I'm really interested in is to find out how you got to this point you're at in your career right now. And in listening and researching, it sounds to me like you almost didn't have a choice in the career and the life that you've made for yourself, because it was, music is really the family business. I mean, your mom, aunt, grandmother, all musicians, or at least insanely talented. Your brother has a comedy club in Vermont. So entertainment and musicality are in the family.
Yeah, I never stood a chance to do anything else. That's just the truth. And good thing I like it.
Yeah.
I can also just be forced into something that I hate. No, I feel very, very, very lucky that I knew what I wanted to do from a young age. I think there's so many kids out there, or young adults or adult adults, who still haven't found their way and haven't found their path and don't know what they're good at. And I'm really lucky that I knew really early on what I wanted to do.
Oh, for sure. So how did you start off in music? Was trumpet your first instrument, or did it start with something else?
Trumpet was like my sixth instrument. I started out on piano when I was about four, and everybody in my family, they were all music teachers. And so we had a grand piano in the house. And so I started playing trumpet, I started playing piano, and then saxophone, flute, clarinet. My grandma was a trumpet player. She was also my neighbor growing up. And she walked in, I was probably 8 years old, and I was practicing alto sax, and she came over and she goes, you got way too much hot air to be playing that stupid thing. And so she brought me over a tuba, which introduced me to the brass family. And I thought, well, this is fun and loud and giant and okay. And then shortly thereafter, I got a trumpet, and it was kind of all over.
That's awesome.
That was the one that I stuck with. I played tuba through high school, through all kinds of things. But yeah, trumpet was like the one that really stuck.
That is awesome. I've got a tuba player, a trumpet player, and a French horn player in the house. So
you do? That's exciting.
Yeah. In fact, two of them have graduated. The trumpet, my oldest daughter played trumpet, and my son plays the tuba, and they both graduated high school.
So cool.
My youngest daughter is the French horn player, and she actually just became the drum major. So, and here's my trumpeter. So there's my trumpeter.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Trumpet to trumpet, let's go. Let's play some duets.
I have to relearn
you have
some
to
stuff. It's been
brush
a
up.
Minute. Yeah.
It's okay. I got time.
There you go.
Nothing going on.
All right, get out of here. I got to record stuff.
Hi, nice to meet you.
She said you too. Awesome. So, all right. So, she loves the albums. I've been trying to share them with the kids and all, because with all the brass in it, you know, I figured that would be something they would love. So they've been enjoying it just as much as I have. So
thank you so much.
So you said you knew really early on that this was going to be your life. So was it difficult to study in school? I mean, could you end up going to school, to college for music?
Yeah. I kind of made up my own rules.
Nice.
From a very early age. I was also from a family who really believed in that. You know, not every conforming thing is for everybody, obviously.
Right.
And so even when I was in eighth grade, we had an incredible music program at our high school. And in eighth grade, I would go to two classes in the morning, and then I would go to take all the high school music classes when I was in eighth grade.
Wow.
And so I really kind of went to that high school for 5 years without you know, staying back or anything, but I got to be in that program for 5 years, and then I did go to music school for a hot second, but most of my incredible, you know, sort of early training was really in high school. And so, you know, when you get to college, it's nice because there's very few things that you have to take, and you can concentrate on the things that you love. It just wasn't really the right place for me necessarily, so I ended up bowing out, which many of us do in this profession.
I did that with photography, so.
Yeah. Like, if you make it to 4 years, you're in a very small percentile. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's so true. In that short time that you were there, you actually were asked to teach a class. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
How does that happen? You're in a music school as a student, and they're like, hey, you want to teach this class instead of attend it?
Yeah, it was... I happen to be really good at sight reading music, sight singing, sight reading. It was just something that we learned how to do along with reading English. We read music. And so I didn't know that was such a strange skill. and I found myself in an ear training class, and on the first day of class, the dean of the school passed out a transcription of a Coltrane solo to some really obscure song that nobody knew.
Okay.
And he asked us to sing it, sight sing it.
Oh, wow.
No accompaniment, nothing. And so he counted it off, and within the first three measures, you know, the whole class had dropped off, and I kept going, and I said, I wasn't trying to be a smartass. I just said, do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
And he sort of folded his arms, and he said, yeah, keep going. All right. And so I read the whole page down, and at the end of it, everyone burst out into applause.
Wow.
And I thought, like, everyone should be able to do this. This is not special. It upset me. You know what I mean? It was like, this is like something that everybody should, I think everybody should have this skill, you know?
Especially at that level.
Yeah.
Taking that course.
And so he said, can I see you after class? And he held me after class, and he said, would you be interested in teaching this class? And I said, no, thank you. I quit school. I was like, that was the moment that I quit, because I felt like I'm paying for this education. And like, this is not the right place for me.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just,
wow.
I don't know.
That's wild.
I wish I could still sight read that well, for what it's worth. That's not me like tooting my own horn. It was just like, at that point in my life, I was a great reader, you know?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is, therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with the stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better, because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Try doing that in person. So join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself, because you are your greatest asset. And a special offer to Performance Anxiety listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. That's betterhelp.com/performanceanxiety. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this podcast. So how often are you singing your trumpet solos, and how does that work? I mean, are you actually just singing it, or are you going?
I mean, it depends. It really depends. I mean, when we were making this last album, it's like I went through and I sang a bunch of stuff, and then that would become the vocal solo, and then I would add trumpet parts in between. We can talk about that later, but
yeah,
it all comes in handy, is all I'm saying. All of the skills that I've learned along the way, I'll find a way to use them somehow. It's not like algebra. I still haven't used algebra, but I still use sight reading every day, other day maybe.
Yeah, I don't know too many people actually end up using algebra. I'm gonna call bullshit on that whole, you'll use this at some point in your life.
Yeah. So I'm sure maybe somebody does. Listen, somebody does. Someone doesn't use the musical education that they got, but they use algebra. Okay. So I'm convinced of that somehow. It makes me feel better about myself, life, and my school system.
So when you went to college for, you know, the brief time that you did, you had made up your mind that this was the path for you. Was your family really supportive of that? That choice?
Always super supportive.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they're wonderful, creative folks who essentially instilled in me that anything that I wanted to do was okay and a possibility, and you just got to work hard at it. So, yeah, they're incredibly supportive.
That is amazing. I love hearing that. You don't hear that all the time, but when you do, it's amazing.
And it's also, I think, important for, you know, we were all in the same industry. We all appreciated the same thing. But there are parents out there who have kids who are really passionate about something that they don't understand. Yeah. And it's hard for them to give them the same advice, I think, you know.
Sure.
But it's important. And if your kid shows interest in something, you just got to nurture it, you know.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Everybody's here for a different reason. And you know, I wholeheartedly believe that it can be really hard for parents to do that. So,
yeah. How did you end up meeting Trey Anastasio?
Trey and I met when I was still in high school. I was living in Vermont. I was born and raised in Vermont, which is a very, very small state. We all kind of know each other. Yeah. Which was, of course, massive at that point. It would have been 1997, 1998.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And he was making a solo record in his basement, as I recall. And and he needed a trumpet player, and he asked around, and this sax player, Dave Grippo, who he used to play with forever, he's like, oh, you haven't met Jen yet. You're going to love Jen. And I went into the studio with him and played this very strange piece of music called At the Barbecue, which I highly recommend you check out.
I listened to that. Strange.
You listened to At the Barbecue?
Yes, I did.
Of that is that no instrument enters on the same segment of the beat, so it's all like boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, doo, doo, doo. It kind of sounds like video game music a little bit, weird barbecue video game at a gazebo where there's like six people present. we kind of hit it off from there, and I went away to college for a hot minute, and he did whatever he did, and then when I quit school, I happened to be, I packed up my stuff, and 10 minutes outside of the driveway, my Nokia brick cell phone rang, and it was Trey. I talked to him in probably like a year and a half, and, hey, what are you doing? I said, I don't know, I just quit school. Yeah. You're in a band with me? I was like, yeah. What are you doing right now? I said, I'm driving back to Vermont, I guess. I don't really know what I'm doing. It's kind of a, anyway, he said, well, we're
right now.
Yeah. He said, well, we're rehearsing at my house. Can you just come to my house? I said, sure. And so I drove straight to his house, and then we were on tour 2 weeks later, and that was 22 years ago.
Wow. So literally 10 minutes after you're done, the phone rings with this opportunity.
Yep.
That's insane.
Your gut, kids, is all I'm saying.
I agree. Oh my God, that is amazing. And so at that time, were you a fan of Phish and like the jam band scene?
No. No, I absolutely wasn't. I was like a full on jazz nerd, band nerd. I loved classical music. I was like the farthest thing from a fan of that band. And because it was all happening as I, like right before I graduated high school, my whole senior yearbook is just full of comments from people being like, good luck with Phish. Oh my God, I can't believe you know Phish. And I was like, I don't care at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be headlining, you know, the North Sea Jazz Festival in 5 years. This is like a one-off. I mean, that was really, truly how I felt.
Wow.
I was like, I met this guy. That's fine. It was a gig for a day. Like, let's keep it moving. I didn't know that he was part of my daily life for the rest of my life. But, you know, life's funny like that.
No kidding. Life is stranger than shit.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to tour? I am not super familiar with Phish's work. I'm somewhat, you know, touched on it here and there, but I know people who live and breathe this stuff.
Yeah.
How difficult was it to prepare for a tour? I don't know how deep the discography was by 97, 98. I'm not sure exactly sure. So I do know that they are known for not playing the same thing.
Yeah.
Over and over again. You know, each set is different. How hard is it for you to not know everything, have a couple of weeks to prep, and then go out on a tour?
The good thing is that this wasn't with Phish, it was with Trey's that point new band. So I've been there for the writing of everything since day one because the band didn't exist yet.
I'm getting my Trey Anastasio stuff confused.
Yeah, okay. No, it's all good. It's all the same family. So I mean, our catalog is also incredibly deep. And we have a 20 plus year history of him writing like, you know, 10 songs a week for 25 years or whatever. And so, you know, and we have everything memorized and all the arrangements and all the lyrics and all the horn parts. And, you know, the horn section plays full on double duty as the vocal section and the horn section. It's a ton of work. His work ethic, Trey's work ethic is like no one else's. You can ask anybody, like anybody on the planet. And if you've spent a day with him, it's insane. And his whole motto for living is it's so good, it should be even better.
Wow.
So like if something was great, it's like, oh, that arrangement's great. It's like, cool. It's so good. It should be even better. And there's never, there's always a feeling of like, there's something more that we can do.
Wow.
So there's never like a resting on your laurels. There's no, you know, he works. And I think that's one of the reasons that he's been so successful is because he really, really believes in what he's doing and he works really hard at it. Yeah. And I think it can appear as though like, oh, you're in a rock band and you just skate by and adoring fans scream for you and whatever, and like that ain't it, you know. That's why he's had a 40-year career, quite literally. He's just turned 58, so it's a 40-year career in this business, which is unheard of.
That's amazing.
And he's cranking harder than he ever has before. So he's a special breed.
So with his work in the Trey Anastasio band, how does it work with the horn parts? Is he writing that and you're learning it, or are you contributing to the writing process of that, or
it works all different ways. It depends on what the song is and what it needs. You know, we do vocal arrangements, we do horn arrangements. Sometimes if it's something more complicated or more potentially like orchestral sounding, he has his amazing orchestral arranger come in and sort of like, you know, there's all kinds of different things that happen. And that's also one of the cool things is that when you have a few different kinds of contributors, it gets to sound different. It doesn't sound like the same old because you only have the same people involved. But there's many, many of those arrangements where, you know, we all wrote the horn parts together, or the horn section did, or the, you know, it's a full contact sport.
So you also do the background vocals with the band. When did, were you always singing? Was singing always a part of what you did musically?
Yeah, I was always involved in choir and musical theater and all that kind of stuff growing up, which is sort of, I think, why I was a confident kid, because I was always on a stage of some sort. And so, yeah, I always sang. I mean, I think I came into my own in my mid-20s as far as, like, you know, knowing what my own voice sounded like, because I had a I was always playing a role or in a support role also. I was always playing a role in a theater production, which is like, okay, you're playing a part. What does your voice sound like? You know, right. It's not necessarily the same thing. Or you're supporting a singer and you have to sound like you're supporting that singer. And if right. it's like a singer songwriter, you're not going to be some bluesy, belty backup singer, you know?
Exactly.
And so yeah. It really took a while until I started fronting my own band for me to ask myself, like, what I actually sound like. And so that's been an evolution, just like everything else.
At what point did you decide this is what it's time for me to do a solo album? And I have a few questions about this because doing the research, I found. All right. So I looked through Discogs to find discographies. And then I also go on YouTube to try to listen when possible. But they're not exactly jibing in this instance.
Okay.
So the first thing I see on Discogs is an album called Fuse.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not anywhere on YouTube. On YouTube.
Correct.
On YouTube, there's an album called Ocean Floor, which is not on Discogs.
Oh, interesting.
So
it's not?
No.
Oh, we got to do something about that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was listening to Ocean Floor. And first of all, the title track is mind-blowing. I absolutely love that song.
Thank you.
It's an amazing album, but that's my favorite track on that album. It's incredible.
Boy, Sapphire Street on porcelain.
So was Fuse technically your first solo release?
Yeah, that was my first solo release that I made in my early 20s when I started to go out with my own band. And in true youngster form, I had an 11-person band, riding around in an 11-person van. We were out for 3 months. I think everybody came home with $300.
Okay.
we would be in... we couldn't afford hotel rooms, so we would get two, like, you know, $39 sleep ins, two rooms with queens, and fit five in one and six in the other. Somebody in the bathtub, somebody between the two beds, somebody, you know, we bring pillows and sleeping bags. And,
wow.
You know, it's the same story that everybody has.
Paying your dues hard.
Sometimes you get to go play Madison Square Garden, and then sometimes this is how you build your own career, you know? So we did that for a long time, but that was when Fuse came out, was in that era.
Wow. That's awesome. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Hey guys, I want to talk to you about socks for a second. Why not? It's a music podcast. But I tried a pair of socks from Boldfoot and loved them. I've only worn them once because my kids have stolen them. So in my household, that's the best endorsement I can give. And I guess it's fitting because the design I chose was jailbait. Wait, jailbird. The design I chose was jailbird. I might keep that in. The socks are 100% American made and 5% of all proceeds go to veteran charities. It makes sense seeing that Boldfoot is a family and veteran owned company. They have a huge variety of styles. So check out boldfoot.com and buy some of the best socks you've ever slapped on your feet. And help veterans while you're at it. That's boldfoot.com. You mentioned Madison Square Garden. So around that time, that was your first Fish show was Madison, one of the Madison Square Garden shows, right? Was it a New Year's Eve show?
Yeah.
That's a hell of a way to break in from what I understand. Those are insane shows.
Yeah. No, it was a spectacular event, I will say.
That is amazing. If I had a chance to go, that's one of the ones I would go see, if possible. I don't know how much. It's got to be almost impossible to get tickets, though, I imagine.
it's you just got to get on it early.
A couple years
like,
early.
By which I mean, like, you sit on the website 30 minutes prior, and then as soon as the second goes to the second that they're on sale, you hit the buy button.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That's what I've been told. I don't know. I'm lucky. I don't have to buy them.
Exactly.
One of the perks.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how that works. I've never had to buy a ticket. I don't know.
Oh. So we have the first solo album comes out, and then, so what came out? What's the next? Is Ocean Floor the next one?
I actually think there was one in between there. I made a straight ahead jazz record in 2007, I believe, called True. That was really just like a gift to. It was a charitable donation.
Okay.
My aunt was going through breast cancer, and I wanted to do something to raise money for her. So I made a record and I sold it and gave her all the proceeds.
Oh wow!
So it was a very we spent 2 or 3 days in the studio and kind of, it was not a super produced situation, but that is out there somewhere. And then we made Ocean Floor, I think in 2011, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Someone can check me on that. And I made that in Chicago with some friends of mine when I was living out there.
So the first two, are there vocals on those or are they instrumental?
There are vocals on those too, yeah.
Okay. So that's you kind of really started experimenting and finding your voice with those two, and then to me it's amazing. Your voice is just unreal.
Thank you.
I'm just absolutely blown away. In fact, the first song I heard was off of Nexus. It mm-hmm. was "You Can't Take It Back," which it's just an amazing song. It's such a great album. The thing that I've noticed in listening to Nexus and Ocean Floor and your brand new one is that the writing is so good. It's so solid. It's, you're not writing to play a trumpet solo or you're paying, you're developing songs. You're paying as much attention to the music as you are to the lyrics, as you are to the actual vocal performance. And I'm so amazed by it. I'm so happy that I got a chance to listen and
hear
this stuff.
Thank you so much. That means more to me than you know. I think the way that I write songs and the way that, I write a lot with my partner in crime, Nick Casarino, who produced the new record and who has been my musical sidekick since we were, kids.
Yeah.
But, the music that we made together, it's hard to compare it to anything. We're not out here making pop hits. We're not making, we're not necessarily making songs that are for radio, certainly, like regular radio. And I find that more interesting. I have really great friends. I live in Nashville and I have really great friends who make their living as songwriters.
Okay.
Solely. They don't have performance careers. They write songs to sell to other people for them to make money off of.
Wow, okay.
So, which is kind of a foreign concept to me. because I'm like, we're sort of always taught to that we have to do it all. Musicians have to be able to do it all. They have to write, they have to sing, they have to play, they have to write lyrics, they have to write music, they have to be tour managers, they have to be travel agents, they have to be, we have to do everything.
Yeah.
And that's still to this day, this is how I operate. And there's so much that goes on behind the scenes. But what I will say is that I was talking to a songwriter buddy of mine who's a very successful writer. And he was like, well, if you're not writing music to sell it, what the hell are you making it for? And I was
wow.
like, oh, so interesting. Like, I was so taken aback. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I was like, well, because it makes me feel good, because I need it, because I would want to hear a song like this.
Yeah.
And I would want to discover, if you listen to, I don't know if you're hip to Hiatus Coyote.
I've heard, yes.
She and her band are so dope, making music that doesn't sound like anything else. And that, it like, really fires me up. And, like, no, you're not going to turn on pop radio and hear it, but, like, it moves me. It's so interesting and so different. And I don't know, I just, like, I totally get off on that. And so hopefully people feel like that. I mean, that's to me, that's the goal, is, like, for people who... I feel like I make music for musicians more than anything, you know, like we want to hear interesting stuff.
Oh yeah. And
I hope everyone likes it, but like, you know, it's not, you're not going to hear in the grocery store. I don't think. If you do, then great. Hey. That's a great station.
It's a great grocery store.
All right. Great grocery store. Man,
I'd love to hear this at the grocery store. I'd be a lot happier than
buy stuff. It'd make you buy stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more than the crap they play now.
I know. Sure. It's so sad. I get really sad. I don't want to buy anything. I think it like depletes the nutrients in the fruits and vegetables. Sad music playing.
Everybody needs their daily dose of jazz and R&B.
Yes. I do. I know I do.
I do now. It's funny because it's not, they're not genres that I naturally gravitate toward. I mean, I grew up in the 80s, 90s, so I was big into metal and grunge and all, and this is a lot different than what I would normally listen to, but I have fallen in love with it. It is so cool, beautiful. And but it kind of I shouldn't be surprised, because I was looking at some of the people you've played with. I mean, Carlos Santana, Tom Petty, Herbie Hancock, you know, it's amazing. And I shouldn't have been surprised at how fantastic the albums were because of the work that you've done in the past. Is it tough to prep for working with like legendary artists like that? I mean, are you given music? Are you going to, what are you doing with these people?
What are you doing with these people? Every situation is different. Sometimes you walk into the room completely in the dark.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're given music ahead of time. You know, what we do on a daily basis is we have to be on our toes and be prepared. But I mean, for anything. Yeah. And that comes in training and experience and all, every moment that led you up to today. You know, with Herbie Hancock, I mean, I walked in, there was no music. It was all being written on the spot.
Wow.
And he said, why don't you go in there and play a little bit and then sing a little bit and blah, blah, blah. It was just like, and I, of all the people that I've worked with, I think I was the most freaked out to be there with him, given my background. And so, and I was young. I was in my 20s, maybe late 20s, but I was in my 20s. And so anyway, he could obviously tell that I was nervous. And I went into the booth to go play some trumpet. And he followed me in there. I had my headphones on. He followed me in there. And he picked up one headphone and gave me the greatest advice that I've ever received to date, and he's like, his mouth is like right at my ear. And he goes, listen, the only mistake you can make is not being yourself. And then he put the can down and he walked away.
Wow.
You know what I'm like? I had just, like, you want to talk about a mic drop, you know?
Damn.
Really meant a lot to me. And I think about it every day still. Still think about it.
I can imagine.
He's not wrong.
No.
That's it. We all bring our own unique brand of whatever to whatever we're doing. And I think it's so, I'm going to slightly soapbox it up here for a second. I think there's so many kids and so many young people who are so influenced by outside stuff because now they can't help it.
Yeah.
We grew up in an era where we didn't have, you know, the internet was not a thing. Right. We can remember like a teeny bit of when the internet was not a thing and there was no Instagram and no one's comparing themselves to everybody else every moment of the day.
Right.
Also with the sort of Instagram generation, you only see the result, you don't see the work. So every kid feels like they're supposed to be good at things and they don't understand how long it takes to get there and what beauty there is in getting there and falling on your ass every day.
Yeah.
And it does such a great disservice to people. So I'm really blessed to have grown up where that wasn't an issue. I grew up in the woods where I got to figure out who I was before anybody was ever looking at me. And I got to have experiences and hone my skills and all that kind of stuff, and which is what we've all been doing in our own rights for our whole lives. But anyway, that's... Well, a tangent I was not expecting to go on.
I feel like you pretty much most of your life, I'm getting the sense that you had a pretty good sense of self for most of your life anyway. So
I did, but and that I blame it on my parents, and they say, no way, dude, that was you. Like, you came in knowing. You wow. came the second that you got here, you knew who you were, which is a tough thing to swallow because you want to say it's about somebody else, you know, in the upbringing that you had. But some people come in here knowing a little bit more than others or more aware of it, I will say.
Oh, I agree 100%.
You know, so, yeah, but I don't take that for granted. Yeah.
With your albums and... the live shows, are you working with pretty much the same group of people recording and touring when it's just your work?
Yeah. Touring gets hard because everybody has really different schedules. Everyone has a zillion things going on at once. So we do as we keep it as much the same as we can. These shows coming up, I have some shows in the Midwest next week, and those will be Nick Casarino, Connor Elms, who are both on the record, and it'll be Desron Douglas on bass, and James Casey on tenor and vocals. And James and Desron are both in the Trey family. I've known for a long time, so those shows will be really fun. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, sometimes the particular gig dictates the band members. If it's like, you know, it just depends. Yes. I say that a lot, but it really does. There's a zillion factors that go into like who's playing what gig. But
have you been writing your own music this whole time? I mean, this, you know, since before working with Trey, or is it that a new thing?
Yeah. Yep. Wow. Yeah. And that's a skill just like anything else that I think you get better at the more you do it. I still don't enjoy the process necessarily.
What is your process?
No. No, everything comes differently. Sometimes you get a lyric, sometimes you get a melody, sometimes you get chords, sometimes no. And if I did it more often, maybe I would have a better formula by now. But that's one of those things that even at my age, I still am positive I'm not good at yet.
So you don't make yourself sit down and write every day or anything like that?
I don't. And I wish I did. Even once a week, I wish that I would just find the time to do that because everything gets in the way. Yeah. And you find yourself in a different city every day and you have to work all night and travel all day. And, you know, it's just... if I'm home, that's usually when I'm writing, but I'm home about 2 days a month and they're usually not consecutive.
No. And you want to spend time with your husband at that point.
Yeah. It'd be nice to like, you know, hang out with my family.
Yeah. So when did you start writing this album? Was this, something, a product of the pandemic, or did you start beforehand or?
Absolutely. No, we found ourselves just sort of in this, time period. We wrote it in January of 2021. And so we had all been locked away for, you know, a good 10 months at this point. Yeah. And I think people were, you know, still scared of stuff at that point, but feeling braver and feeling like, okay, all right, we got to figure this out because we can't keep going like this. And we exactly. all miss playing music and writing and just seeing each other, quite honestly. And so Nick and Aaron Boyd and I went to Vermont, and Nick's family has a super good family friend runs a beautiful inn in Vermont, and they leave for 3 months to go to Florida during the bitter, bitter winter, and so it's empty. And they moved in there for the 3 months, and I went up for 10 days, and we wrote the album in the snowy, bitter, gorgeous, gorgeous Vermont winter.
10 days.
Yeah.
Wow. It's incredible. The songs are so beautiful. I mean, all right. So my particular favorites, I love By the River, Guilty.
I just had to keep on moving till I was back in your arms again. Mm-hmm. guilty, and I'll be guilty the rest of my life.
Enamored and When I'm Weary. Those are the ones that I keep going back to now. Yeah. I'm sure they'll change as I listen more and more, those are the one, two, three, four. those are the four that I keep going back to at the moment.
Yeah. Enamored. It's funny because Enamored we wrote toward the end of the session. We kind of said, you know, we just threw out some things, some subject matters that we wanted to write about, first of all.
Okay.
I mean, it could be anything. And then we got about, you know, 5 or 6 days in and realized that we hadn't written a love song. And we're both very much in love with our partners and have wonderful partners. And it's tough to write a love song that's not cheesy. It's like real, but not cheesy. And so that was the goal. We set out to write a love song that wasn't cheesy. My husband actually sings backup vocals on it.
Really? Oh, that's awesome.
Yep.
When I'm at home, wrap my arms around you. Feel so rich, I'm enamored by you. Here I am writing songs about you. Never ever wanna live without you. Time just stands still. With you I just
Guilty is actually, I would love to take credit for Guilty. Guilty is a Randy Newman song.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. And it's, I didn't hear Randy Newman sing it until I started doing like a little digging. I heard Joe Cocker sing it.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, and the way that he sings this song and the way that the song is written, I just thought this is the single saddest song I have ever heard in my entire life. It really is. And like, I just like, I don't know, man. I was really like, I was just moved by it. And I just selfishly wanted to sing the song. That's all it is.
That's
like, I want to sing this song.
Hey, that's a perfectly valid reason. That's awesome.
I know. I went with it. I said, you know, it's okay.
Now
I
was going to say, I've got to do some digging because Randy Newman and Joe Cocker.
Right?
That's.
I know. Check out the Joe Cocker one first, because the Randy Newman's really strange. It's like, it's a very strange arrangement. It's got really strange string parts behind it that are completely dissonant. It's very, check it out second is all
okay.
I'm saying.
Check it
out first, you will never be like, I hate this song. I don't know what this is. I never would have recorded it if that's the first version I ever heard. And then By the River, I wrote after that session. It was the last thing that I wrote. And once we had recorded the entire album, I felt like there was something missing.
Okay.
And we recorded everything, and obviously not everything makes the record, right?
So
we recorded like, you know, 14 tunes or something, and then we narrow it down to our favorites. And I felt like there was something missing. I said, I feel like there's like just a joy bomb palate cleanser thing that needs to happen, like just a celebratory something. And I wrote that song in about 3.5 minutes.
Wow.
It's a complete autobiography of my young childhood and the celebration of being a girl playing in the mud and all the stuff that I got to do.
Little girl playing in the river, daydreaming and skipping stones. Little girl playing in the river,
singing my butt off where no one could hear me and hanging out with my brother and my boy cousin and, you know, anyway, that's what it's about. That's all it is. And
that's awesome.
And I was so happy that we were able to put it on there. That was like the missing piece for me.
It is great. It's fantastic imagery. It's one of the reasons I love it so much is the lyrics. It
happened. It's because everything in that happened.
So you're out on the road right now. Are you touring with Trey at the moment, or are you doing your own stuff?
I'm out here with Trey through this week, and then I start a tour. I go home for one day, and then start a tour of my stuff, and then I'm out with Phil Lesh for 3 or 4 shows in New York, and then I come back for Trey Halloween, and then Trey starts another whole November tour, and so I'm basically out until Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll get to play more with my band in early 2023.
Do you know at the moment, is it going to be the same group of people for when you go out?
It should be. Yeah, it should be most of those guys. Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome. I got to keep an eye out because I would love to see your show.
Where are you located? I should have asked you that before.
Just outside of Washington, D.C. I'm in Winchester, Virginia.
Okay, cool.
Home of Patsy Cline.
Hey. I'm gonna sing, but I won't.
Feel free. What's the best way for people to pick up the album and to follow you and find out when you're touring and who you're touring with?
Yeah. The best way is to just go to jenniferhartswick.com. That's got everything on there. Social media is great. Jay Hartswick on most things. And that'll let you know where I'm going to be and with whom. The best way to get the album, quite honestly, I feel, is to come to a show and pick it up off the table yourself. We're a real good time.
Oh, I bet. And the music
is amazing.
It's a
really fun show. We're musicians, but we're also entertaining. I think I'm entertaining.
I think you're hilarious. I've been listening to a bunch of podcasts that you've done earlier the past couple of years, and I've been enjoying them just to listen to them.
Thanks.
They're a blast. So
usually my mouth is a lot dirtier, but I think for you for some reason. I don't know why.
Probably because my daughter swung.
That's exactly right. You introduced me to your daughter in the first 40 seconds, and so I behaved myself.
Oh, she's been out of the room for like forever. Oh, my other daughter.
Oh, hi.
She's coming. She likes to say hi when she can. So this is my French horn player / drum major.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This is Jennifer Hartswick. She plays.
I think French horn is one of the very, 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 very hardest instruments on the planet and the most beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So if you're rocking that thing, then congratulations.
Yeah. She's now the drum major for the high school marching band. So.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
My tuba player is out fixing his car right now. So.
Oh, okay.
He's also the mechanic of the family.
Well, that's good. I'm not saying there's not a lot of tuba gigs out there, but there's more mechanic gigs than tuba gigs.
For sure.
All right, don't say I bet. I know from experience.
That's All right.
Bye.
So you're meeting almost the entire family at this point, man.
I love it. tell your tuba player I said hey, too. And I'm sorry, mister.
I will. So the best way to follow you is to go to the website and check the links there. You got your social media links and everything there?
Yep. Everything's all linked in that cute little page.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, beforehand, I just went and followed you on Instagram and a personal and the podcast sites. So I'll be following you. But thank you so much. I know I've taken up a bunch of your time. It's been kind of scattershot here. It's a little, I got thrown.
Welcome to life.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all your time. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. So nice to meet you, and I'll see you out there.
You too. Talk to you later.
Never mind it being alone. I might even prefer it. Free up a little time to spend with you. A couple dates by the fireside. Even let you meet a friend of mine. If you take me for a bite or two, it's true. I stayed a little longer than I should. It's true. Felt good. For you.